Tell Me What to Read is recorded on the lands of the Wangal people, and we pay our respects to all elders past and present, and extend our welcome to any First Nations people listening today. This is Tell Me What to Read, brought to you by Booktopia. I'm your host, Nick Wasiliev, and welcome to the show where we chat about the next great books you should be reading with the authors behind them and familiar faces who read them. All books mentioned in today's show can be found right now at booktopia.com.au, and the links can be found in the description.
This is Tell Me What to Read, powered by Booktopia. And just before we get into our conversation, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. That is where we are broadcasting from right now, Wurundjeri country. So if there's any mob watching, a special hello to you. And we do give thanks and we commemorate our elders past, present, and emerging. Yeah. This land was never ceded, always was, always will be.
Fact.
I'm Georgie Tunney. I'm the host of The Project. You may all remember, you may remember me from such things as ABC News Breakfast, Flash. I also happen to be the partner of Mr. Robert Mills. You may remember him from such things as Australian Idol, Ghost.
Do you want me to do this?
Wicked. No, I'm okay. Doing it. Oh, I'm the host.
I'm sorry.
I'm the host. Dancing with the Stars,
oh, yeah.
All-Stars edition.
Very good.
Also, though, You went out an author.
Yeah.
This book here, Putting on a Show.
This happened.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Read.
Thanks for having me, Jordan Tanny. I'm in my own house, so thank you very much.
Why should we read this?
Okay.
Get straight in.
This is the elevator pitch. Look, I think this is the book that will hopefully help with a lot of blokes, so a lot of women trying to work out what it is to be an Aussie man or what it is to be a man in a modern day society. How are we looking? How do men look at a world post Me Too? How do we become better men? What can we learn from our grandfathers and our fathers? What can we learn from the people that are around us? What can we learn from ourselves? And why are we not introspecting as men? Mm-hmm. And what can we learn from women, from our LGBTQI plus allies? It answers a lot of questions, but also throws up a lot more questions for yourself to ponder. Mm. So yeah, I think that's why you should read the book, and you also learn a little bit about me along the way. The aim was to create a safe space, so you learn along with me because I learned a lot throughout writing the book.
Well, we're going to get into what you learned in later parts of this conversation, but first of all, I want to ask you. Because I have been able to see some of the writing process.
All of it.
And we're going to go into all of that detail too. But now that it's finished and it's a physical book that sits in front of us, What's the reaction been like for you having it out there in the world now?
Pretty nerve-wracking. But to be honest, I'm a very open book as a person. Like I'm very honest and very – there's nothing that you can't ask me that I won't just tell you. I think that's one of the things I've tried to be is authentic and as authentic as possible over my whole journey being in front of the public eye. And then there's no secrets, but then there was a few sort of secrets that I was sort of holding on to, which I think people will learn about then now and go, oh, who cares? If you don't care, I don't care. So it feels good to have the book out there. It feels good to be getting messages from people, reviewers, critics, like book critics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm used to theatre critics, but like book critics, they're all like loving the book. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm pretty chuffed. I'm going red just thinking about getting messages from a 22-year-old diesel mechanic saying, Millsy, I'm halfway through the book, just absolutely loving it. I'm going through a lot of this stuff with my friendship group or the blokes I work with. This is really helping me through a tough time, which is just really beautiful, heartwarming.
Yeah, we had the launch only recently.
A couple of weekends ago,
And when you were reflecting on the 22-year-old diesel mechanic, I can see right now that you get emotional talking about it. Just a sip of the coffee, a strategic sip of coffee.
Yeah, I get emotional because maybe as blokes we don't have those, or maybe I didn't have those mentors or role models to look up to that to talk about this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they were there. And I'm sure they were their uncles, my stepfather, even my dad, he was definitely there. It's not like they were absent. But it's just like we just didn't have the conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations that probably girls were having with their mums. Mm. Isn't that, it's strange to think of it. A lot of, like, I'm generalizing a lot. Yeah. I'm absolutely generalizing.
Straight away, I was like, no. That's stereotypical, and I understand.
I generalize a lot in the book, so please don't come at me. But women are much better at having conversations and deeper conversations, therefore deeper connections with people.
Why?
I don't know. And this is the thing, I talked to Dr. Zach Seidler about this, and I said, is it DNA? And he's like, I hope not, because if it's DNA, then what am I doing with my job? Like, it's my job is superfluous. Like, society has told us to be strong, to be stoic, that being vulnerable is to be weak, so therefore we don't do it enough. Or maybe it's the carryover from a colonial past of, like, having to make ends meet, having to really dig deep. You know, people have got it harder than us, so we should just, you know, the tight, stiff upper lip kind of thing. Maybe it's all that. And now we're finally talking about stuff. I don't know. It's always a fine balance. It's trying to work out what is resilience and what is actual. I'm a victim in this society that I'm living in. Yeah, that's the thing with the book. It's like, what is it for you? It's different for everyone.
Mm. You are very open and honest in daily life. You always, ever since we started dating, you encourage me to speak, and it takes me a while to figure out what my thoughts are and get them into a place where we can discuss the thoughts rather than having conversations in my head.
Yeah.
But despite that open and honesty and that kind of nature of you inherently, when you sit down and when you sat down and you were writing this and you started and you were confronted with a blank page, were there ever parts of you that thought, I actually don't know how to translate that openness onto paper?
No.
No.
No. When I sat down and just wrote.
Yeah. Was it daunting?
Yeah. There's a few times I stopped just because there was a block. There was just, like, nothing was coming into my head. But other times when I got in a real flow, I could write for hours just typing away. And I'd send it off to Paul Connolly, who's incredible. Thank you so much, Paul, for helping me put all my thoughts and feelings and all those interviews into one cohesive kind of manuscript. But when I'd send it off to Paul, he'd send it back and go, yeah, some of it's good. But there were moments of I was daunted by it. But then other times I was like, who cares? Like, it's just, as I said before, like, trying to create a safe space for blokes to be able to talk about their thoughts and feelings, then therefore I need to share. And so we do it in the men's circle that I sat in. If you can share something with your mate, therefore they'll feel more comfortable sharing something that they want to as well.
Mm.
And that's what I wanted to do, is, yeah, create a safe space so I have to share something about me.
Let's go back
yep.
to how putting on a show, Manhood Mates and Mental Health, actually came to be.
Yeah.
What sparked it? How do we now have this here?
So during the lockdown in 2020, where
good times.
Great times. Mm. Brought us closer together. No, brought us into the four walls, and that's all we had.
Physically, we were, yeah.
I lost a few friends to cancer, like two in like the space of a couple of weeks. It was, well, you were there. It was pretty
awful.
Heartbreaking. And I'm not alone in being the only one who's lost people, especially during COVID, where you couldn't even go to the hospital or you couldn't get to the funeral. I couldn't get to both funerals. One of them was interstate. One of them was in Melbourne. I still couldn't get to that. And that's pretty hard because you need your tribe, your community to grieve. And I chose, we didn't really have any other choice, just to sit at home and do nothing.
Mm.
And then the moment that we were opening up, I went out for drinks with mates and I got really drunk a few times. And I was like, I just felt worse. And then really realizing, obviously, that alcohol is a depressant.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having a good hard look at my relationship with alcohol over the last 10 years or so, especially like since we got together. Mm-hmm. You don't really drink, so I don't really drink now as much. But those moments of really drinking, I was like, oh, this is not good. Mm-hmm. So I wrote about it. I wrote about this sense of what the New York, I think it was Washington Post, was calling languishing.
Yeah.
I think at the time. I was like, yeah.
Such a great term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not thriving, not really falling back, just sort of treading water.
Yeah, it was like limbo.
Yeah. And I sort of felt that, but worse because of the alcohol. And so I wrote about drinking and about blokes not dealing with their stuff, but choosing alcohol or drugs for some, gambling for others. And that really struck a chord with, I think, the blokes around Australia. So the publisher saw it, Martin Hughes at Affirm Press, and said, would you be interested in writing some more about this? And I said, yeah, I've always been interested in about Australia and identity, about this identity that we have or have not got in this country. And so I just chose the only sort of topic about identity that I knew a little bit about, and that's my own experience of being an Aussie bloke.
Why did you not want it to be a straight memoir?
Oh, life's not that interesting. like I grew up in the suburbs. I feel like I've got more questions to ask than I have to tell about myself. Also, I don't like making things about myself, which is strange because I'm the face of a book.
Literally face of the book, yeah.
Yeah, and I've done a one-man show before. Mm-hmm.
You are an actor and a singer.
Yeah.
You make a living on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't like – I like being the team.
Yeah. I can also confirm this. He is the worst when anything is about him, which has been quite confusing to me throughout us.
You're the guy.
Yeah. Well, you're the guy, and you're like,
oh. I'm the guy. I like being part of the team. I like the, you know, many hands make light work kind of thing. I like just being a part of the greater good or the, yeah, there's something, maybe it's just growing up playing baseball and cricket and footy, that you're a part of the team. Like being on the wing, just like being on the ball, swapping into the forward line, you know, like just put me in the game, coach, anywhere.
But is that why then you decided to take a different approach in the structure of this book, in that you wanted to have it be an investigation really into masculinity, what it is to be an Aussie man, because you were writing from your own personal experience, but then there are lots of different interviews with many different people in this book.
Yeah, because I didn't want it to be solely about myself and my own experience. Kind of like Lee Sales' Any Ordinary Day, which I read during the lockdown, which is really inspiring. I mean, she interviewed some incredible people who had gone through horrific, traumatic experiences. And those interviews, I kind of wanted to be something similar, where I learned a lot with Lee. You felt Lee introspecting throughout the book, reflecting on her own life through these experiences of these wonderful people. And I thought, I want that to be the experience for the reader for my book as well. What can we both learn, or what can we all learn together as we read? Which I think is a, I don't know, it's not a self-help book. It's just like, helping, maybe it is. Maybe it's sort of, I definitely do say
that.
We
did find it in the bookshop. It was in the self-help section.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's definitely not a self-help book. It's just I think it's just a series of interviews and some really good research that both Paul and I found throughout the web and research papers and stuff over the last couple of years.
How did you find being the journalist? Because I am a journalist and my job is interviewing people, but, you know, I went to school for that. You didn't. So how was it wearing that hat or finding the hat?
I think it's just about being inquisitive and about not making it about yourself, which is weird. Once again, the book is about me, but it's knowing when to talk, when not to talk. It's especially when you're interviewing people like Pat McGorry or Professor Jane Perkis or Tommy Harkin and Tyson Yonker-Porter. I mean, you just sit and listen. Just throw in a few more questions. I loved it. I really loved it. I think I love learning, and it took me a while to really love learning. But if it's something that you're interested in, I think it really flows. Like, you just have to ask the right questions or have an idea of where that you want the interview to go. And that took me a while as well. Sometimes I was asking the same set of questions, and then I was like, oh, no, this person is, they should be, I should be asking them something more, something different. It was just all trial and error. But no, I don't want to be a journalist. I still like being. I still feel like
that's my job.
No. I still like being on stage. Stage is where I'll probably remain for a while.
If you were to build the quintessential, I'm using quotation marks, Aussie bloke. I also really struggle using the word bloke. It's very foreign to me.
Yeah, good.
The quintessential Aussie man. Who is it? What do they look like? I mean, and I'm asking, before maybe you began this investigation, what did it look like?
Oh, the archetypes of like years gone by. We're looking at your Jackie Howe wearing sheep shearing bloke, your Bondi beach blonde surfing guy. Probably back in my day, it was the yuppie, wore the suit and was in working in the CBD all the time. Now I honestly don't know. There are a plethora. And that's the thing I learned throughout the book, the diversity in Australian men. I mean, from different cultural backgrounds, from Indigenous background, like from Caucasian, from all across the world to all the different types of jobs that they do these days. Like, we are so diverse, and that's so amazing. But I think there's something still, I'd like to think it's an Australian thing, this thing about mateship, that we would do anything for our mates or for our family. There is, I read this thing that in Australia, we give more than any other country per capita. We give to charity when there's a flood or there's a fire, we give more to our community. And there's something, I don't know whether it's an Anzac spirit or whether it's just being Australian, I don't know. But I love the sense that we are a nation of givers, that we maybe it came from not having a lot or being the little brother or the younger cousin to America and England, and or just the fact that we are a colony of like randoms, like that we have to sort of bond together to make our community stronger. But yeah, I like the fact that we are stoic when we need to be stoic. There's actually something, I met a woman, she runs the children's hospital down at Monash. She said to me, I asked her, what does she think masculinity is? She said, I think for me, masculinity is, what did she say? She said, it's doing the right, having the right emotion at the appropriate moment. Does that make sense? Yes. Knowing what the appropriate emotion to put out.
But why is that inherently masculine?
I don't know. That was just her thing the other day, and I really liked it.
Hmm.
Like, a man should know when he needs to cry or when he needs to hold someone, but he also needs to know when he needs to be strong and angry and not vengeful, but like he needs to be strong and stoic.
What did you learn about labels working on this book?
I would say it's similar to what I just interviewed Courtney Act, Shane Jenick, the other day. He talks about gender fluidity.
Hmm.
But I think there's a spectrum of all kind of characteristics, whether it's masculinity or vulnerability or it's stoicism, all kind of values, they are all fluid. Everything is fluid. Nothing should be stuck straight in cement, you know? It should be, yeah, sometimes you should be more vulnerable, or other times you should be more stoic. That there should be a fluidity to it within the parameters, you know.
How do you think typical Aussie men or blokes, I literally choke on the word every time I go to say it, do that?
We're not good at it. One of the studies that Zach Seidler did, he said when asked to write down what it is to be a man, I think he said 9 out of 10 wrote my penis.
Oh my god.
And then the other couple wrote and my balls. Like that's where we're at.
Okay.
So if we can get past blokes learning a bit more about, just go a little bit deeper. Gus Wallen talks about the need for real chats and real conversations. And at the moment, we probably do it at 0%. A lot of men, I'm generalizing once again. I know within my friendship group, we have real chats all the time. We go for long walks and have really good chats. But if we just get that real chat up to like 5%, keep the banter at 95%, for me personally, I'd probably like the real chat to be around 15 to 20%. But look, that's a high bar.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just 5% would be good if we just have some real conversations with our mates.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be bloke on bloke chats. This can be blokes with a counsellor, blokes with their partner, blokes with their family member, whatever it is.
We've talked about national identity and maybe how Australia struggles with forming one.
Yeah.
What about your own personal identity? When you were going back, if we focus more on the memoir side of this book, you were going back and sorting through all of those memories and having to put them down on a page and see where it would fit with the narrative of the book. Were there any that were harder than others to reflect on?
Oh, it's a good question.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. It's my job.
It's very good. Thanks. She's a good journalist.
Yeah.
Look, I would say the hardest one for me to sort of not to talk about, but what I thought would be the public perception would be probably the sexuality chat, where I mentioned Courtney Act and I mentioned a few moments throughout my life or experiences. I don't want to call them moments. I should call them experiences that I've had. which were wonderful and weird and crazy and awesome and kind of like affirming and like strange, but also knowing that they don't define me as a person. I think a lot of blokes struggle with their sexuality, whatever spectrum that they're on. They're like, well, I can't be like that, or I've got these feelings for this guy or for this drag queen that I've, you know, and they tense up. And I think there are people, and there have been throughout history, androgynous men or like sexually fluid men that are becoming more acceptable. It's weird that it happens mainly through the arts, like your David Bowies or your, I suppose the equivalent now is Harry Styles. And I kind of wanted to sort of touch on that as well. Like, yeah, it just happens, and it's okay to have thoughts, feelings about all these things and experiences that will help shape who you are as a person, and to not shy away from it or to not carry this. And as I spoke to Shane the other day about the guilt and the shame that goes with wanting to come out to your parents or to talk about your own sexuality, a huge burden on not just men, but women and trans kids. Like, it's a lot. And if we can just open the conversation up to it being completely normal, I think we'll save a lot of lives, but also save a lot of heartbreak. But yeah, definitely save a lot of lives.
I think that the conversations you have with sexologist Georgia Grace,
name, right? She's fantastic.
In the book kind of go towards that. You cover differences in what people want and what they don't like and all of this when learning about your own sexuality. But you also talk about penis size and male pattern baldness as well and how that affects Aussie men. She was one of many experts in this book that you consult. Were there any experts that surprised you during the interview? And it did go, as you said, a completely different way that you were thinking.
Oh, so I'd read Tyson Younger-Porter's Sand Talk, which is a great book. You definitely have to read that. And I thought I was going to get more of an Indigenous take on how blokes could learn from our Indigenous sort of heritage. What can we learn? And Tyson went on this incredible rant about incels and about MGTOW, which is men going their own way. And I hadn't realized the subsect of sort of men that existed online and in these tight-knit forums. They sort of found this place of hatred and of anger, and they're stuck in their bubble and their own algorithm of like, women are taking our jobs. Women, like, I deserve a woman. How dare she take things from me? Not just my job, but she's taking sex away from me. This involuntary celibate kind of take, I was like, I had no idea. And I was like, I have to put this in the book. This is, people need to know that this is happening. And I didn't want to sensationalize it at all, which I think has been done in the media and social media forever. But it exists and we should be aware of it. And these blokes need to be told that it's not okay. Or, hey, mate, do you need a hug? Because women not coming for your job. Also, you don't deserve sex just because you're a man. So I think that was a really fascinating chat. And I was like, oh, by the end of it. And Tyson was walking the whole way through the Zoom. I was sitting in my car because it's during lockdown. I was sitting in my car to try and get better internet doing this Zoom on my laptop. And he was pacing the whole time. And I was like, it was like watching Blair Witch Project because he was getting so worked up about it. It was brilliant. It was just such a
camera.
Yeah, it was such an amazing interview, and it's not where I thought it would go, but it was super pertinent to the book. I'm really glad it was in there. And I grabbed some other stuff from Sand Talk as well throughout it.
What was the most fun thing about writing this book?
Chatting with Paul, like, I think was one of them, and him giving me the permission and the courage, I think, to go and write more or to go deeper, to go deeper into my own stories, but to flesh them out a bit. Or one of the fun bits was meeting the firefighters and just being inquisitive in that moment. So I met these firefighters. I talk about it in the book, and I was actually going to talk to the firefighters about Aussie men being really good lovers. And it turned that actually flipped around to this mental health chat about what they do in the firefighters. And it's an incredible chat. And that just came from literally stopping and asking a question. So I think that's the, I don't want to say, is it fun? Yeah, it's fun. It's fun because I was inquisitive in that moment. And it's amazing what you can get if you just ask a question. That's kind of fun.
What or how has Robert Mills changed as a human throughout this process? What's different about you now that maybe wasn't the same when you started?
I am definitely more self-aware. And I mentioned that.
You're already pretty self-aware.
Yeah, but I think I really, instead of shying away from it, instead of going into a dark hole for weeks on end, I'll probably just go for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Play PlayStation for a couple of days, maybe like finish Call of Duty in
2 days.
Why has that changed?
Why has that sharpened?
Because I know what's good for me, and I know like the things that work to make me a better person, like exercise, contact with friends, having conversations, real connections, chats with you and I, go for a walk. Like, I know what works, and I know that you don't need to be scared to better yourself. Like, I think we get stuck in just complacency with life. And it's not, you should never mistake complacency for contentment.
Mm.
Contentment is excellent. Complacency, not so much. So I think I've learned about that, about being happy with contentment, but also like knowing what I need to keep edging a little bit further and further and further to better myself as a person.
Were there any reactions from family or friends or even fiancés that you were worried about?
Oh, the sexuality stuff. I think you and I had a chat about that. You're like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
But it's just a conversation that we got to have.
Mm-hmm.
There's been conversation with my parents and a few other sort of family, friends and stuff lately about sharing and maybe oversharing. Maybe at an older age don't like oversharing people's stories, but I feel like...
I think it's a very typical thing of a particular generation, which is like, well, why does anyone need to know?
And I feel like it was important to say all these things, and definitely never in a way to undermine family members or... I feel like they were important milestones or stepping stones or pillars in my development or in my life to make me the person that I am. So without them, once again, I'm not walking the walk.
Mm.
So I had to share these things about the stories that I had. So people go, oh, I've got that. Oh, I had that. My family was that. Or my friend's family was like that. I can see why they're like that.
Mm.
If you don't share, then once again, you don't get the sharing back.
Mm.
So there was a little bit of backlash, but nothing that, as I said, a good, honest conversation can't remedy, I hope.
Christmas is around the corner.
Yep.
I'm giving you another opportunity to do an even shorter elevator pitch than you did before.
Oh.
Why should people buy Putting On A Show?
Okay. People should buy Putting On A Show.
I'm gonna time you.
Okay.
Let's time you. You get 30 seconds.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. I've got to open my app. I've got to find the timer. I didn't think about this.
Put a cut on this.
No cuts. Okay. She's so techie. All right. You got 30 seconds.
Okay.
3, 2, go.
If you want to learn a lot about some really interesting people who work in the space of mental health, sexology, just inquisitive, lovely humans, then read this book. If you want to learn more about who you are as a person, read this book. If you want to learn a little bit about me, read this book. You'll laugh. You'll be astonished. You'll be shocked. But also, I think you'll have a deeper connection with yourself and therefore deeper connections with other people.
Oh, you finished with 2 seconds to spare.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. You can ramble. That wasn't bad. That wasn't bad at all. I have one.
I need a deadline. I'm very good with a deadline.
Yes. I have two final questions and I want you to answer them as quickly as possible, maybe even less than 30 seconds.
Yes.
Yes or no, does the quintessential Aussie bloke exist?
Oh, yeah, my mate Macca is still, I feel like he would say he's the quintessential Aussie bloke, but I also think I'm the quintessential Aussie bloke.
Mm-hmm.
So, like.
It's like I'm Spartacus.
Yeah, I'm Spartacus.
Spartacus.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, no.
No.
Okay. Clear it. Yeah. Read the book. That will clear that up.
Yeah.
What's next? What's next? What's coming up? I'm going to pretend like I don't know what's coming up for you.
Say more stage shows.
Okay.
It's very exciting. Stay tuned. It's an excellent potential show.
Yeah.
Potential show.
Something's happening.
Yeah. I mean, and some good synergy, like author to author.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, cryptic. Once you find out, that'll make more sense.
Yeah.
Now I am going to again consult my notes because I want to get this part right.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Robert Mills.
I've just joined you in the house.
It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you for
having
me.
Tell me
what
to read. Oh, you're welcome. It wasn't very good. I burnt the milk.
No, it's very good.
Yeah. Okay, great. Good. She's very domestic. Now, thank you for being with Tell Me What to Read.
That's okay.
Did you hear that bit? You were talking about the coffee when I said that.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Powered by Booktopia. For everyone listening to this, you can check out Robert's book, Putting on a Show, right now. There is going to be a link in the description of this video. And if you enjoyed our show today, you can check out more episodes of Tell Me What to Read right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Drop the show a review and let us know what you think. Only positive reviews. You can check out the Booktopia Christmas guide as well in the description. We're breaking from the script here because some suggestions for what people could read other than Putting on a Show, what people could buy people for Christmas gifts.
It's a really good, easy Christmas read. Mm-hmm. It's for those who haven't read a book in a while. It's just so lovely. Eddie Jacku. Mm-hmm. I don't want to tell you anything about it other than it really is, he is the happiest man on earth. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll see why. He's gone through a lot, but also just so, he's an astonishing life. You would think it's a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous, the amount of things that went through his life, or he went through in his life.
And my big tip is, it's an older book, but it's actually, we had a discussion recently. We had a discussion recently about, like, you could only read one book for the rest of your life, only one. What is it? And I said very confidently, Finnegan of the Rock by Malena Marchetta. And that's what it is. What it is. I don't counter it. I haven't changed my opinion. So if anyone is into, like, a young adult fantasy with really strong characters, development.
With a female lead.
She is a female
lead. It's
called Finnegan of the Rock. It's a Finnegan. And I was like, no. I can't give anything away because it's got a great twist, but it is one of a trilogy. But if you start it with that one, it's just amazing. Melina Marchetta wrote Looking for Ella Brandy, so she is an incredible Australian author.
And also Australian author Trent Dalton, Boy Swallows Universe. It's a few years old now. They turned into a play. I think it's going to be a movie. But, yeah, it's a classic Australian story. It's so good.
It's so good. Okay, those are our top tips. Returning to the script. There's also going to be a curated gift guide for recommendations across fiction, true stories, kids and more. That's fun.
Oh, good.
That's really fun.
I will check that out.
Once again, thank you so much for joining us on Tell Me What to Read. Thank you for listening and keep reading.
Thanks to all of our guests on today's show. Remember, all books mentioned in today's show can be found right now at booktopia.com.au. Links can be found in the description. We would also love to hear what you're reading, so feel free to join the conversation on social media. Search Booktopia on your favourite platform and join our book club. We'll catch you for our next episode, but until then, thanks for listening and never stop reading.